Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Pod Stallions. I'm Brian, and with me to my left, many miles away, is Jason.
I can see for miles, and I am many miles away. Hello everyone.
Today's episode is something that we're both, I think we could talk about forever. I don't particularly have a clever name for it, so let's just call it, for now, bad movie merchandise. And, you know, the infamous... We've all had it as a kid and as a teenager and as an adult collector. You love a property. You go to the toy store to pick out your plastic interpretation of that property, and it's largely terrible.
Right.
Sometimes, and, you know, occasionally on the internet you hear of people being a little upset about this.
There's that, but there's also, I find that there's also another thing that starts to happen, and I'm guilty of it too, is that this topic is going to cover several different areas of this. One, just the bad choices, you know, that are made, and like, how did that get through, you know, like there's confusion on several levels. How did it get past the design thing? How did it attend to that? And then being on the other side of it as long as I have, there is the, how did that get approved? Forget if it's a likeness thing. If it's just a studio or a network thing, how did that get approved and make it to shelves? There's that. Then there's the, you know, what were they thinking with just complete madness of a line or a particular theme to a line or what have you. But the thing that's kind of come around has been some of this stuff is so bizarre, and it may be sometimes the only representation of said property or whatever, that some of us, I think you and I included, become sort of fascinated with them. And if it's especially if it's a finite line, one of which springs to mind right now that we'll talk about in a minute. But before we even get into this, I want to preface this. Both of us have experience now producing toys of our own, you know, for our respective toy companies. You're Odeon, I'm Biff Bang Pow.
You might have more experience with licenses than me. I mean,
okay.
Of the two figures I've produced, one of them, the license holder, is me.
Right.
I'm a jerk. But, I mean, I will say that I am very well versed in China and how you can – unless you fly there and stand over everybody for 3 months,
right,
you're not going to get what you want.
Well, there's all that and all the stuff that we've been through. And, yes, I've dealt with loads of – studios and everything. So take all that away. Take all the madness of people breathing down your neck or not having enough reference or not, whatever. The majority of stuff that we have done as a company, for the most part, has been cult related. In other words, it's been a 10-year-old property or a 30-year-old property or a 50-year-old property that exists. We still may have to do a lot of that work, but there's a little bit less risk involved because it is well known. When you're dealing with something the movie is going to hit August 20th, or it's going to be out for Christmas or whatever, and you've got, you know, deadlines on this stuff, and if it's a new property, there's all sorts of additional headaches that come into it that these companies have to deal with. So to be empathetic, it's not the same world that it was 30, 40 years ago in the way this stuff is done. And the best example I can give is being a kid and reading the Star Wars Marvel Comics adaptation of the first movie. Not only was the artwork insane, it was, I think Howard Chaykin did a lot of it. It was just crazy.
It looked very rushed too.
It was very rushed because it was rushed. And so much of it didn't make it in the film, and the Jabba the Hutt scene and all this shit. We didn't realize until you were much older that, you know, they got to start working on this thing months and months before the movie comes out. They may have a copy of the script and a handful of images. And you can sort of apply that to these movies and TV series we'll be talking about, that maybe this thing that we know now as this huge thing, when this first movie came out, no one really knew it and it wasn't that big of a deal, et cetera. So I'm just trying to throw that out there as devil's advocate, saying there's a certain amount of sympathy. We're not trying to rip all these companies and products apart. Most of them we own and have spent money.
This is totally not a nerd rage situation. Some of these lines, you know, Jason's going to bring up lines that I collect, or, you know, and it's just kind of done out of fun.
Exactly. So,
and you know, the other point I want to make is, and this happened, you know, we were talking about Odeon, but then I did work for another company, and I had to deal with, you know, DC Comics and Universal and all these. Sometimes you as a fan go, all right, I'm going to do this, and then they go, what are you doing? No, follow the style guide.
Yeah.
You can't do that. And you know, the greatest example I have is Universal Studios for years has insisted that the Frankenstein monster is wearing a green sports coat. So every time a toy...
It's Brooks Brothers, isn't it Brooks Brothers?
Yeah, it's a Brooks Brothers. Yeah, he got it downtown. Yeah. But every time there's a new figure of Frankenstein, somebody will start going, what is wrong with these people? And it's not the toy manufacturer's fault.
Yeah, well,
it's in the style guide.
I could give a million examples of things that have happened to us where, you know, certain things aren't even worth mentioning, but other things where they've stepped in and said, no, you got to do it this way, or what are you thinking? We had a lot of pushback with a couple of Doctor Who situations, from Dalek design to, I think this is the most infamous that I've talked about, sending designs in for, it was either Sarah Jane or it was Leela.
It was Leela.
And having them rejected with the note, this is not a Doctor Who character. Please resubmit with the proper character, etc. And the other thing was, you know, I understand wanting something to be uniform and, like, when it hits the shelves, don't cause confusion. I remembered hearing this from Product Enterprise, those guys, because they were right on the cusp. They were flying the flag for classic Doctor Who stuff just as the Eccleston series was going to get up and running and got announced.
Yeah,
and
they were in the who gives a crap period there.
Exactly, and they made some gorgeous stuff, but had so many battles, one of which finally was when their prop replica Fourth Doctor sonic screwdriver, you know, metal replica, no sounds, just a replica, when it finally was going to get released, the months of fighting to put on the classic Pertwee Baker logo on the packaging, while the BBC wanted the British taxicab, the new logo for Eccleston, that kind of thing. So one of the things I wanted that was on my short list when we first got even talking about Doctor Who as a license and the categories was a set of coasters, each one celebrating and representing a different Doctor Who logo. You had Hartnell, Troughton, Pertwee/Baker, you know, Davison Baker, you know, Colin, but you know, all the way up to the Matt Smith, you know, series. And man, did we go round and round about that, because they didn't want any other logo even remotely on the market that wasn't the current logo. They wanted that thing to represent all incarnations of the Doctor, and it doesn't fucking make sense. So we both made lists of stuff that comes to mind. So why don't we go back and forth, and why don't you start with one that comes to mind? Why don't we start with Daypole? As long as we're talking about Doctor Who, that's one of the first things that comes to mind for me.
It's kind of funny, too, because I just bought the Daypole TARDIS gift set on
that's
the weekend.
That's right.
Because I love that set. And so I want to point out that this is my third run of Daypole figures. I bought them, of course.
Really?
Yeah. This is a true story. When they first came out in '88, I bought them at a toy shop. And it's really funny, they arrived the night of my prom. You know, I bought everybody, even
how
though
much,
I...
How much action did you get that night?
Well, I'd rather not say. but Well, it's not like I brought them to prom. It's just I got a package.
I know. I just was making it. I just can imagine you at prom going, hey, everybody, look what I just got.
I got my Sylvester McCoy.
Mr. McCoy.
Ace. Yeah.
Is it a band or a DJ?
No, go ahead. Sorry.
That was, you know, I mean, I didn't get the Migos, obviously, when they came out, but there was no Doctor Who action figures other than the Migos.
Never was.
So 1988 for the 25th anniversary.
Yep.
A company I've never heard of called Daypole comes out with actually, I'll be honest with you, my beef with them is not the first wave of figures. They did the right thing. They did the new Doctor, his assistant.
Yes.
The Tetraps.
Tetrap.
Canine. You know, they did Daleks and Canine, and it the first series of figures is actually, it's fun. I like it. They were a train manufacturer.
Right.
And they were really sweet people. I interviewed them once for a magazine.
No, they had shitloads of terrible luck. My beef has always been, well, first of all, I was there. I don't think I'd even seen an episode of Sylvester McCoy when those things hit. But I wanted them because I was moving farther and farther away from toys at that point anyway. But I wanted them because it was like, well, here's the thing that I wanted. And if it's going to, I'll support it because if there's a way to eventually get other doctors.
Vote with your dollar.
Yeah, exactly. And so I did. And yes, they were shoddily made, cheap plastic, all that stuff. But they existed. And my favorite thing was the TARDIS. That a TARDIS existed with a light up top and the doors open up and all that. Like, oh my gosh. Like, my TARDIS toy was the tin. Was the bank, you know, the tin with the slot in the back for coins with Baker, Tom Baker, and then Davison in the doorway. My beef became when you followed that thing. And again, you know, not really their fault. But it was like this stuff, once it got into your hand, this was approved by the BBC. These and Doctor Who had a history very much like Bond. You know, unfortunately, James Bond like had its heyday in the mid-60s, just like Doctor Who. It was all about Daleks. Bond was all about other stuff. You know, Bond was all about cap guns and vehicles. It was all about Corgi and Lone Star. But it had a huge heyday in the 60s, whereas it was piecemeal throughout the 70s and certainly in the 80s there was nothing. They just never have a bunch of people had the rights to something that they didn't know what to do with merchandise wise. And I can speak from experience now trying to deal with them in the past year or so, where unless it's Heineken and a $2 million tie-in, they don't care who's doing what, which is a shame because there's so much to be mined from that stuff. But it was how much worse things got. Like every now and then, like the Sea Devil that they made was great with a little cloth.
Well, that's where I wanted to go, was the later figures as they went on, there was just no consistency.
Right.
It was all, and I know they had a fire and, you know, their Whomobile was burned and their 12-inch Sylvester McCoy and Ace dolls never got off the ground. And there was a lot of stuff they were planning. But you know, they famously released, I think in their second year, they released a fourth Doctor.
Yes.
It was, and I don't know if it was a sculpting challenge or if Tom Baker was being especially difficult. that was a Tom Baker action figure.
Yeah.
Like it's just Tom Baker in a sweater.
Yeah, they labeled it wrong. It was supposed to read Tom Baker down the pub.
Yeah, I mean it isn't Doctor Who. He's not wearing a hat, he's not wearing a trench coat.
He's not wearing a coat, nothing. He's it's Tom after a couple of drinks and he's getting warm.
But, so you know, these guys carried the torch for so long and I support
them. Oh yeah, they did.
I think they went through a period where they stopped and then they released, I got the news in the magazine that they were going to do Pertwee, the Master, Sea Devil, Silurian. I was all in.
Two different Silurians. They did the modern and the classic Silurian.
Yeah, they did the Sea Devil, which I think is their best figure.
If you really want to find this, there must be an archive of this somewhere, and I forget who this was, but the Tomart magazine. There was the guy that reported on the international stuff.
I remember that guy.
He was a UK guy, and my God, did he have it out for Daypole, in that it was this twisted relationship that he couldn't wait to see what they came up with next, being a Doctor Who fan. And then this – I mean, there were times where he'd be writing and be like, well, here it is, the latest from Daypole. It's been a year and a half since their last – figure. And I kept going, how do they still have the license? They got to renew this thing. It's got to be making money. How are they making money on this? And it was like a Time Lord, Time Lord with the big collar that they made. I mean, it looked like someone took the yellow happy face symbol and like stuck it on an action figure.
Yeah, he had a really goofy expression. From what I understand, Daleks were a license to print money.
Well,
and that's what
they must have been, because they eventually made like every iteration of a Dalek you can imagine in every playset you can imagine. They did them clear. They did them. I think the ultimate thing was they reached a point toward the very end where they made a Troughton and they made a 10th planet, not a 10th planet.
The Tomb of the Cybermen.
Tomb of the Cybermen, and they were statues. They had no articulation.
Yeah.
And then they made a clear TARDIS that was filled with jelly babies.
Yeah, I can remember, though, the disappointment I have with this line was, I'm a huge Pertwee guy. The figure looked great. It was gigantic.
He was Andre the Giant.
Yes, and Tom Baker was too tall, and the Cyberman was too tall, and they were all different sizes.
Yeah, there was no consistency. That's the perfect way to put it. There were some you could pick out two or three that were highlights, and there were just this shit ton over here that were horribly, horribly made. Along the same lines, but not nearly as insane. This is one that I always go back to that I think I adore this because it's insane. Star Trek the Motion Picture comes out in 79. There's a merchandise blitz, the likes of which the property has never seen before. There was more merchandise for Motion Picture than anything that had come out for the series previously. I mean, they were ready for this to be Star Wars, and it clearly wasn't. I think stuff did okay, but you'll know better about the Mego stuff. But I don't think I ever picked any of that stuff. I might have picked up a couple of small figures here and there. Star Trek II comes out, Wrath of Khan. It's a different kind of animal. I think so many companies got burned by the first movie that there was nothing. I think there was like a digital watch and that had a game attached, you know, an electronic game in the digital watch. There were some metal miniatures, I think. And then you uncovered, or we had talked about this, there were a Corgi or Dinky released a Motion Picture Enterprise and a Klingon vessel. Which was crazy because the Klingon ships only show up during the Kobayashi Maru getting nerdy. The Kobayashi Maru test in the film. Clearly, the Klingons didn't actually show up, and the large ships weren't used until much later in the film series.
And I think the Corgis even said something like "the Vengeance of Khan."
The Vengeance of Khan.
I bought mine at the CNE as a kid. I was just actually in the building. I bought them 2 days ago.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So nothing comes out for Star Trek II, and then there is this shift. 84, I think everyone was kind of talking, going, this is going to be a big genre year. You know how we missed it for 82 and like some stuff hit and some stuff didn't? Well, let's not miss it for 84. And so 84, you were going to have Dune and Temple of Doom and Star Trek III and Gremlins and The Last Starfighter, I think, and some other stuff that, you know, that there was merchandise here and there that was done. We'll get to some of that stuff. So someone somewhere said, we got to do something for Star Trek III. So Ertl, I don't know if Ertl had a die-cast license for them or what, but they must have had – this is what Ertl made for Star Trek III. They made a die-cast Enterprise. They made a die-cast, I think, the Bird of Prey, which they reissued for Star Trek V, exact same die-cast. And they made the – what is it, the Excelsior? What was the one that Scott
– Oh, my God. You're right. I think they did.
Yeah, I have it. They made that. That's the hardest one to find. But they made that as well. That's the one that Scotty messes with and breaks it down. They made an electronic pistol that couldn't look less like anything to ever come out of the universe of Star Trek if it tried.
You got to understand, though, I talked to somebody at Mego,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of, you know, saying, hey, if you guys had more money at the time, because 82 was not a good year for them, and they were, of course, winding down, and they were done by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did kind of say, would you have gone after Star Trek The Wrath of Khan? You probably still had the Star Trek license. And the person I spoke to said, after the motion picture, we were done with Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get that. That's why it's so – well, it's remarkable on several levels that anything was getting made. But I think, again, there was this notion that this was going to be a big summer. But, again, it's not like it's this huge license with a ton of merchandise. So Ertl makes this laser gun, this electronic gun that is just crazy. It's white. It's got a conical sort of front. It's got different settings. It's got a sticker for Star Trek on the side of it and this crazy artwork that was on the die casts, the action figures, and the gun of I want to say Spock, Kirk, Christopher Lloyd's Klingon, and maybe Scotty, but I think it's just the three of them. Then we get to the coup de grace, which is the action figure range. Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is why it's so mental, okay? You got the Klingon, who's the bad guy, with his dog, which is as big as the Klingon in this thing. They are jointed. First off, Ertl making action figures, like you can count on one hand the number of figures like this that Ertl...
Actually, they did make a lot of action figures. They made...
They made them like that, though?
Well, they made like 3¾-inch... they made a Lee Majors Fall Guy.
Yeah, those were crazy. Rocky. Those were die-cast.
Like they Ertl just seemed to pick these weird, like,
see, what,
like
yeah,
nobody
what,
else wants them licenses
what I'm
because
saying
they
is
sold
that,
toy cars.
But you can almost – okay, so you had that line you're talking about. It's a range of Colt Seavers, of the race – Richard Petty, I think the race car driver, some other athlete or something, and Rocky from Rocky III in trunks – and with boxing gloves on. They're die-cast metal, okay? They have 4 points of articulation, and they're die-cast metal. So you look at it and you go, somewhere there must have been a clause in that license that said, oh, you can do this too. And they went, well, you know, we're the die-cast metal people. That's all we've ever done. And so they made die-cast metal action figures. But for them to do G.I. Joe-style articulated plastic action figures was crazy enough. The fact that the characters they chose... This is Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. The characters they chose were Kirk, Spock, and Scotty, which is insane for a number of reasons, that it wouldn't be McCoy. I don't know where that decision came from. Number two, they're wearing the Wrath of Khan red uniforms, which they wore in Wrath of Khan and then the subsequent ones.
I never thought about that.
They're not wearing those uniforms in Star Trek III. They're wearing civilian clothes. And number three, Spock isn't in the movie until the very end, and he's wearing white robes. He's not even in uniform. So,
you know, I never even thought of that, and I've owned those.
None of that makes any sense. Plus,
they're well sculpted figures.
They're great little figures. I love them. They're insane because they don't make any sense for the property that they're representing. And then, best of all, they come with, I think, Spock and Kirk came with a phaser. Scotty came with a communicator. The phasers and the communicator are almost made for like 12-inch scale figures.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I was collecting by that point, and I was happy to see them. It was nice to see Star Trek merchandise again.
Oh, yeah.
And I honestly remember putting those phasers in Mego hands.
See?
And they fit like a glove.
Yeah, they were massive. They look like they're carrying around hair dryers.
Yeah,
but I love those because it's a finite range. You can easily get all of them. I mean, whatever. I don't know what the cost is, but it's not hard to track down four characters.
Well,
you know?
My favorite thing about those is that summer my dad bought a boat, and I didn't have a job yet, so I had to end up going, you know, boating with my parents every weekend, and you know, we go to these little towns.
Uh-huh.
And Ertl's a weird company in the fact that they get toys, because they do toy cars and nominal items, they get toys in weird places.
Mm-hmm.
So every grocery store we'd stop up during that summer, I'd find one or two of those Star Trek characters on the shelves.
Wow.
And a lot of them were broken in card.
Yeah, they weren't. It's a very light plastic. It's a very, you know. But see, it's funny because... It also makes me nostalgic for Intergalactic Trading Company. We talked about these guys way back when we were talking about the world that existed before the internet and trying to track this stuff down. And I am so in love with that company, but specifically the catalog that came out for summer of 84. It had what I now understand to be catalog pages printed in their catalog from LJN for Temple of Doom, for Dune, for Ertl, for the Star Trek III stuff, Gremlins, all the stuff that we just discussed was all in there, all this stuff. I never saw any of this stuff in actual retail stores in 1984. Like,
you never saw the Ertl line?
No, and I never saw the Temple of Doom figures. I was looking for those. I never saw those in person. I didn't get those until much later when I got them through the toy shop, you know, when Last Crusade came out, kind of thing.
I never saw those in Canada.
Give me your next property that you would say was crazy.
All right. This one's an easy one. When this happened to me, I think when I was a kid, I got these digests from Archie one summer that was Archie's Superhero Comics. And in it were these characters like The Fly, The Shield, Lancelot Strong, The Shield.
Okay.
And a lot of these characters, you know, they had some really good...
Oh, I know what you... Okay, yeah.
Steel
okay.
Sterling. And a lot of these characters had some really good upbringing. I mean, you know, Kirby and...
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I can't remember who the other fellow is that co-created Captain America with him.
Joe Simon?
Joe Simon. And so these were back issues, and I fell in love with these characters as a kid. And I realized that a lot of the Mighty Crusaders comics that came out in the 60s, and I remember in college I would collect these because they were so mind-numbingly stupid. Because they were trying to be camp and hep like Marvel, but they didn't have a clue.
Right.
But I really always loved the Mighty Crusaders. So
right.
I'm about 15 years old. And I read in a toy list, a woman's got a toy list that she sent me the catalog from. This was the internet days. Maybe I was 16. And it says, Remco Mighty Crusaders figures.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, these are like superpowers. I order every single character.
Oh, wow.
And because they were like $6 each.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to one of my earliest mentors from the Comic Buyer's Guide days. Of collecting, his name was John McGonigal. He's since passed on, but John was like an older brother type collector. You know, he would talk to you and anyways, I think on the phone I told him, "Hey man, I bought the Mighty Crusaders figures," and he went, "Oh, have you seen those?" And I said, "No," and he goes, "Okay man, well listen, brace for a little disappointment because those aren't like." What does he say? Those aren't like toy store stuff. That's like discount store stuff. And I'll never forget it. Like Remco was making action figures, and they could easily make something decent, and they could easily make something that was kind of crappy. These were like a love child of Secret Wars and a dollar store He-Man knockoff. In that they had these kind of plod bodies, like no other figure had these bodies.
Yeah, they're weird. They're not as tall as Masters of the Universe.
No.
And they're not as short as standard, like, 4-inch figures.
No.
They're 5 points of articulation, and they're just kind of crazy. But there's something attractive about those, too.
No, they're not.
Well, but you know what I mean? There's a nostalgic thing where, like, you want to... But here's the... You know, we got to go further into this and talk about more stuff because I have an interesting question that kind of just popped into my head about all of this, and we'll get to it. But keep in mind that we're... What a different world it might have been. You know, Star Wars... Like you cannot overstate what Kenner did with that property. And I'm not saying that Mego didn't get accuracy right, you know, before this... And other company, you know, Kenner did it with, you know, other properties and stuff. But what they did with Star Wars to get things as accurate as they did with creatures and stormtrooper helmets and things like that, you know, that became our high watermark, our ground zero that we compared everything else to. And when something came out that you were like, huh, you know, we were spoiled by, and Mego as well, the great 8-inch stuff. When Mego did 3 3/4 and stuff, it was great. The only thing that always threw me between them and Mattel with Battlestar was not having eyeballs. But other than that, the sculpts were dynamite.
Mego used Bill Lemon.
The details were great. And so when something did come up that just, you know, we were so spoiled by, I think, that accuracy that maybe where some of this, you know, kind of came from or noticing such things. So Star Trek III, we might as well just throw this out there just for 30 seconds. Star Trek V, which is the bastard stepchild of the classic characters Star Trek movies, Galoob was on the scene with its Next Generation line of figures, which I'm no expert on. Which characters? I know some of the characters that got made. I know they made a couple of vehicles kind of things. But they were, you know, they had a certain popularity because that show was doing well. By the time Star Trek V came out, Next Generation been on the air for a couple of years, Galoob must have had a joint license.
Yeah, it was probably a master license.
Or they
cut a deal. Like, I don't know about you, but I've been in a room where we had to take one thing to get the other thing.
Oh, yeah. That could very well be what it was. Having said that, everyone, you know, go now and Google Star Trek V figure.
I have a theory behind this.
What the please explain.
Well,
what level those things would have looked like anything else out there and what they were thinking.
Galoob threw a party and thought kids would come to the Star Trek The Next Generation party.
Mm-hmm.
Largely it was adults.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because all I can remember is going to a Star Trek con and like, do you have White Faith Data? You know, that whole...
That's the rare one. There's also one that has...
Yeah, yeah. And I remember walking into Toys R Us and seeing two guys, and it was weird back then to see adults digging through action figures. And that caused, I don't think kids came to that party at all. I think mm-hmm. it was all adults. But that still doesn't explain
what the thinking was behind.
Well, they were making collectible statuettes that, you know, I mean, you walk into a comic store, you'll see those for everything. They didn't think kids were going to buy Star Trek V action figures.
I see.
So they let's make a high-end adult collectible.
This was the next best thing for that audience. They would want something like this. Well, they're horrible. They're shitty. They're horrible. Everyone's in a different outfit because they're all wearing those crazy fucking, you know, take a weekend off outfits that they have in that.
Row your boat.
Yeah. So there's that.
Those were like, I think mail order only. I never saw them in a store.
I swear I saw them in a couple of stores, but I don't remember where. But I thought I remember sort of picking them. I mean, it was like, you know, Suncoast. They showed up that kind of place in the U.S. There was like a Suncoast kind of thing. The other thing along those same, it's sort of in the same kind of universe. Well, certainly the Star Trek III stuff. LJN, Kenner had the license for Indiana Jones for Raiders, and they did a fantastic line, which no one bought, called The Adventures of Indiana Jones, you know, basically for Raiders, but in hopes of more things happening. Great play sets, a vehicle, stuff like that. I don't know why Kenner didn't continue, since they still had a relationship going with Star Wars, why they wouldn't continue this or what happened. But LJN swooped in, and in 84, they got the master license for Dune, which we can get to, but see, Dune is where I think it fits. I love those toys. I love those figures. I love the role play guns. I wish they'd made more. There were two characters they didn't make. There was a utility belt that was going to come with a non-electronic Fremen gun and a knife and things like that they never made. There was a ship, the big black Harkonnen ship that they never made. I wish they had, because I loved it. So
they
didn't
make that dong that they call a sandworm.
Yeah, they made the sandworm, which was top secret on the back of the package. Spoilers. So they had that, but I wouldn't even put that in this category. They got Temple of Doom. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Now, this was a very different movie than Raiders. Everyone knows it was very dark. I mean, it threw me as like, why is this thing so dark? It's very, very different. It took me years to appreciate it more than I did. I still think it's incredibly weak, but it's super, super, super dark. Like, even those of us that have been through the Star Wars experience and how dark Empire was is nothing compared to Temple of Doom. So maybe they got early word, because a lot of the merchandise that did come out is very strange. For Temple of Doom, there isn't a ton of it. Some of the stuff that did come out is weird. The artwork is weird. Some of the promotional posters, like for US Procter & Gamble type tie-ins, the artwork is very strange. The board game artwork is a bit strange for Temple of Doom. And then along come these action figures. The card art is the same picture of Indiana Jones, and they're a completely different scale. They're like that 5-inch scale with 5 points of articulation and action. The goddamn Battlematic action feature on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Very detailed, all things considered. Indy had a removable hat. He's got a cloth bullwhip. He's got a removable bag, and he's got the sword that he has toward the end when he's got, you know, half his shirt ripped off. So he's wearing the jacket and his hand is bandaged. It's got great little details like that. And from certain angles, it kind of looks like Harrison Ford, but not really. So the ones that they made were Indiana Jones, Mola Ram, and the giant Thuggy, who was the bad guy for him to
fight. And that's it, right? Like Short Round never came out.
Short Round and Willie Scott never got made, though they're pictured in the catalog that was in that same intergalactic blah blah that I was saying talking about. But that was it. That's the whole toy line. There was supposed to be a minecart chase, you know, sort of a Hot Wheels type set that was supposed to have come out that got prototype got made. That never happened. That's the entire toy line for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which is the next film in this sequence of, you know, characters coming from the same people that did Jaws, Star Wars, Raiders. I mean, Raiders was massive. And maybe it's because the indie toys didn't sell that well, but it was a huge, huge movie. So Temple of Doom, you'd think that companies would have lined up to do something. So that's a very strange...
You know, see, the other thing is LJN was not known for action figures at the time. Like, I mean, they did some stuff in the 70s that was very popular. And... But they didn't do a heck of a lot.
No, and it's funny. That year, they got Dune, they got Temple of Doom, and they got Gremlins. Those were three. I mean, you know, Dune didn't do anything. Temple of Doom was massive, and Gremlins did okay. All very dark films when you think about it. But
I think they sold a lot of Gremlins toys.
The Gremlins did okay, but I mean, the movie did okay. But like they thought, you know, Spielberg attached monsters, whatever, it was going to be huge. So they got three big licenses that year. So that one, so the Temple of Doom, and then on the same, I better throw it in there, people probably know, they don't know, this started to surface in the late 80s, early 90s, mainly because of It's a Small World. I think they were the first ones to uncover these. A company called Star Toys in Spain, according to the copyright, 87, 88, licensed bits of merchandise for Indiana Jones. They made these Indiana Jones action figures, 5 points of articulation. They're the most – they are the kind of thing that you think is a knockoff that people find, you know, in an airport in Hong Kong or something that says, you know,
soup. I remember them. One comes with a snake and the other comes with a something else.
Oh, there's one that's shirtless that comes with a snake, another shirtless one – that comes with an alligator, the same ones wearing a little cloth jacket and a belt that come with either, I think a rat or a couple of rats, a snake, alligator. There's one that comes with a digital watch. I mean, it just, and then I eventually had something that I sold years ago, but they also made this like set that was like a canteen, a camera, a digital watch and some other shit, and the cover artwork is incredible. Like this incredible airbrush thing you'd see airbrushed on the side of a building with Indiana Jones holding the walkie-talkie up to his ear, you know, drinking out of the thermos, wearing the watch, you know, by this ridiculous company that you can't get any information on. But those were licensed figures that were made. And of course nothing was ever made for Last Crusade because clearly this shit wasn't doing well. But
you know what, I don't think he's ever been, and I remember when Hasbro went all out and did that Last Crusade line, nobody's buying, like, those that love Indiana Jones love it a lot.
It's so,
but it is not Star Wars.
But it's not even close. It can't be, because it's so beloved. It's so and
iconic.
And iconic. And those last two sets that they did, the Last Crusade set and the Temple of Doom 3¾-inch figures that they did, are fantastic. You couldn't find them in stores. I mean, I certainly couldn't. But Temple of Doom.
You know what I could find? I could find Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, you can still find Shia LaBeouf, I think, if you go to certain Targets here. But they were great, and nobody cared. I don't know. Like, it's definitely put the nail in that coffin. Like, no one's going to do Indiana Jones. But anyway, those are my next picks. What else do you?
Okay, I've got one that goes right back, and I say this with love in my heart, and I have these figures in several different formats, but. In 1978, we got Superman the movie. Mego had the license. Obviously, they had the Master Superheroes license. I talked to several people. For whatever reason, and I don't know if it has to do with the Donners or likeness or what, they did not produce exact representations of Christopher Reeve and Marlon Brando and Terrence Stamp and Gene Hackman and in their movie costumes. Now, this may have been an aesthetic design decision to go with their comic costumes, or it may have been a way of skirting the likeness rights to some of the actors.
part. See, I thought because this was Mego that you would sort of have a definitive answer on how come they're. I always wondered why they didn't look like the movie outfits and characters.
I never could get a definitive answer out of anybody. However, I do know this, and that is in 77 they released the 12-inch Wonder Woman doll, and the first version has Linda Carter on the box.
Right.
And apparently she shut that down and said, if you want to use my face on this package, you got to pay me $25,000. And you'll notice that next, Mego used a drawing of Wonder Woman on the box. So I think the mindset was, it's Wonder Woman, it'll sell regardless. So they didn't marry to the Donner film design. Now, they released a line of 12-inch figures that I think are beautiful.
They're amazing. Yeah, you mean the original ones from 78?
Yeah, the heads kind of all slightly, but not completely resemble Christopher Reeve, Marlon Brando. And I think I've even spoken to the person who sculpted them, who said something along the lines of, I was told to make it look like them, but not too much like them.
Yeah, it's right in the pocket. But as a kid, I was so thoroughly confused. Even if I sort of was aware that they wore certain outfits in the comics, I was so – the movie had become so ingrained, I could not for the life of me understand why they were wearing – they were not wearing the outfits that they wore in the movie. So I remember
watching the commercial for it, the 12-inch line with flyaway action as a kid and going, I don't get it. But I kind of wanted them.
But the commercial, do they have clips from the movie?
No, they don't.
And anywhere on the packaging, does it say Superman the movie?
No. This is a DC comic, and I think that has to do with the intricacies of Mego's license. They had the DC Comics license for Superman action figures.
But what about that? Isn't it, you told me about this. I didn't know this until a year or two ago when you told me. Wasn't there a company in Mexico that was doing that did
it? No, it's Model Man in Spain.
Model Man in Spain. Okay.
Made a Superman, and it's just a Model Man figure in a Superman outfit, but the box looks like the Fortress of Solitude.
Doesn't it have like the Superman the movie logo kind of thing?
Yeah,
everything?
Yeah. And that's an oddity, and they must have negotiated that with Warner Brothers, but they also made a Jeep for Superman.
Well, because he, you know, sometimes he gets, I don't know if people know this, he gets a bad tummy, and if he gets a bad tummy, he can't fly.
But so, my complaint with Mego was not the 12-inch. That's a beautiful line. They had a line running at the same time called Pocket Superheroes.
Yes.
And the first year they did Pocket Superheroes, what they were doing was they were taking a line called Comic Action Heroes, and they were giving them new legs and making them look more like Star Wars figures. And then for the second wave, they just started new sculpts. And all of those figures are well sculpted. They're beautiful. Except for the Zod, Jor-El, and Lex Luthor figures. Now, Mego made a Lex Luthor figure. I was excited about it. They're just, I don't know who they got to sculpt them.
Mm.
They obviously didn't keep going with them because the next wave of Pocket Heroes are a much higher quality figure. They look almost like they rushed them out. And, of course, the card art is very generic. It's a very quick job.
What's the one that has, like, the blue jean kind of card art? Is that Pocket
Heroes? That's Pocket Heroes. That's I think that's an earlier – that's the first four,
I think.
Could
not get more generic. It's a great idea.
No. The blue jean cards are actually the best cards, in my opinion.
Like, you can carry them around
red
in your pocket.
Cards.
That's great.
Yeah.
But no one's going, yeah, but what characters should we put on the front? What kind of artwork? It's like, nah, make it a blue jean. No.
The blue jean cards actually have the specific character. They have Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, Hulk on them.
Oh, they do?
What you're getting mixed up in is the series that the Jor-El, Zod, it just says Pocket Superheroes.
Okay, it's like a red card.
Yeah, with this serif font. It is, and it doesn't tell you who it is.
Okay, that's
and
what
I'm getting. I'm holding Jor-El
now, which are the ones that have the bent knees, though?
Those are Comic Action Heroes.
No, those are before Pocket or after?
That's 76 to 78. 70, yes, around that era. And then midstream in 78, the Pocket Heroes came out.
And those are the ones that have the straight legs.
Yes.
So, and Cap Cap and Superman have like the metallic emblems on the front.
Yeah, they used a little VAC metallics, and
I like those. I dig those.
I love them. I absolutely funny,
I don't
adore
have them. Off air, we got to figure out how you can track me down. I want a Spidey. I want a Cap. Well, I really want Spidey and Cap. That's it. Those are my
Spidey. I run into every weekend.
Those are my favorites. Okay, so there's that. Speeding up a bit, we could talk about Willow by Tonka.
No, I don't want to talk about that because you have that on your disappointment list.
Well,
I remember thinking, what the F? I remember thinking, what the F? Like, are they trying to make D&D miniatures?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not saying that I came out of the movie going, I want some Willow toy. None of that. This was still not, far off from the era of the 3¾-inch figure ruling all. G.I. Joe was still a big thing. It was only a few years since Star Wars kind of wound down. Like if you were going to do something and it was in the Lucas universe and it was going to be with creatures and horses and things like that, you still wouldn't think that you would, that Tonka would get
the butts. The first thing, well, Tonka was, again, everybody was trying to get into action figures in the 80s, and Tonka actually made significant tries. They did a beautiful line of action figures that's sort of Mad Max inspired called Steel Monsters.
Okay.
And then they did a line called Spiral Zone.
Spiral Zone.
I think it was Tonka, which was based on a Japanese toy line. And so the Spiral Zone, I think, were like 6-inch Mego type figures. Steel Monsters were beautiful 3¾-inch figures, and then you get this, like, let's just create our entire new format.
Well, and for those of you that don't know, the Willow things were like army men style figures. I want to say figurines because they had no articulation. They had little army men style bases. Then there were some that rode horses, but the figures I don't think could come off the horses. You had a couple of vehicles. And then you had the two-headed creature, the stop-motion creature that came out of the swamp or whatever. But it's a very strange choice to make. And again, it's that WTF, like, why would you – I don't understand that. And along the same lines is – we're getting a little more current. I'll speed it up to the few things that we're kind of talking about that are a little more current. Well, shit, let's just get right to it. I mean, I was going to talk about this other one, but let's go right to it. In 1995, two movies that were touted to be big movies, 95, 96, were going to be big movies. No, I'm sorry, 96, I think.
94, yeah, maybe 95. I can't remember.
Were The Phantom, the Lee Falk King Features character, The Phantom, which was, Robert Evans produced it and a big studio behind it. This could be the next Batman or whatever. It wasn't, of course, but it was still it's still something that they thought, you would think that was a superhero thing. What's it going to do? The other was Mission Impossible, the first Mission Impossible film directed by Brian De Palma, Tom Cruise, and that whole cast. But Cruise was the mainstay.
That movie.
Cruise was the mainstay in all these Mission Impossible pictures. Two companies. The company that got the Phantom was called Street Players Holding Corporation,
which sounds like made up. Fake company.
Yeah, like we got it. They're here for taxes. What should we be called?
And the Street Players. I have the Street Players Phantom toy.
Well, you have the but
I have the Phantom on his throne, and the Phantom on his horse.
The Phantom on his horse. That is the kind of toy. That is the kind of toy that you would maybe see in like a hospital gift shop at 3 a.m. Like there's nothing left to get for a kid.
A hospital gift shop in Chinatown.
In Chinatown. Like the horse is like a flocked, like it's got feathers for a mane. Like it's so insane that you cannot.
Oh, let's not forget about Charlie Brown. The Phantom is the saddest action figure ever.
It's not even. But see, again, these aren't knockoffs. This is someone at the studio granting a license, and then that thing came through. So we assume that thing came through at the studio, and somebody signed off on that and said, "Yeah, put this out to the stores."
I want to point out too, the English on the back of the box makes no sense.
Right.
It's just like Phantom is great hero, it just
I think it was the same guy that wrote the script. It's not a terrible movie. But there was also another item. There were two other items that didn't get mass produced. There was supposed to have been a bad guy to go along with, you know, one of those pirate guys to go along with your sweet Charlie Brown Phantom action figure to fight them. And then there was a 12-inch Phantom figure.
My buddy owned that.
See, and that thing, from the pictures I saw, again, it looked like...
Here's a Ken doll.
A dollar store Ken doll that they painted purple.
Street Players looks like a company that was... Somebody gave, you know, somebody $1 million to start a company, and the person embezzled all but $50,000
and then released
these toys.
Well, here's the ironic thing about it is, the figure that comes with the throne, the one saving grace, and it's kind of mind-blowing, the two metal rings that come with the figure set are fantastic. Like, they're heavy, you know, they're better than anything else associated with the film are these two big, heavy rings. And then for Mission Impossible, which, here's the conflict, you can look at those from a certain angle and think of the year they were made and think, yeah, somebody was trying to sculpt some kind of twisted version of Tom Cruise. Maybe that was it, maybe not. I've always heard that he will not allow anything to be made of his likeness because of the Scientology thing, which doesn't explain Travolta being a sweat hog, a Travolta figure, and Battlefield Earth when it's still his likeness, even though it's a creature, because he's a Scientologist. So I don't
surprisingly
know.
That's not on either of our lists of bad movie merchandise, because that movie got great merchandise.
Oh, Battlefield Earth?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's...
Nobody wants it, but
it's actually, considering the steaming pile of crap that it's based on, you know, not a bad figure line.
One of my favorite movies to watch.
For the time. But the one saving grace of those Mission Impossible figures is they came with little rubber latex masks that you could actually slip on over the action figure's face. Now, was it genius? Was it great technology? Was it, you know, the next, you know, Battlematic action or whatever? No, but it was referencing the feature, but more importantly, it was referencing the source material it was based on, the TV series and all the masks that they wore in the TV show and stuff. And it was kind of for a crappy little company, wherever that company was, that made these things that were licensed figures. And it started with a couple of them. Like, one, he's a fireman. One, he's like in a T-shirt that eventually is a tuxedo. And they try to replicate the, you know, hanging off the wires in that room kind of thing. And there was a third one. But then you'd eventually go into KB like a year or two later, and clearly this company was going off the rails, and they were like, we got to do something with this. We got to make some money because we're going to, you know, we got
to
pay for
this. I seem to recall they got into KB receiving and immediately went into the dump bins.
Yeah, I think you're right. But they then started to I'm saying a year later, whatever, they started to go even further. Like, painted him, you know, with a silver outfit, and he was like a scuba man or whatever. Like,
oh, really?
They threw everything they could. They made like another five or six incarnations of this character in different outfits because they had to do something with this license.
Or maybe they sold okay for, because they were cheap.
They were cheap. Yeah, they were super cheap. Yeah.
Yeah.
But those
maybe they were you know, moving units and just,
I mean,
who knows?
It's a time that we people forget. It's so so quick to forget. That was a time that we were excited by genre things that were coming out, and I looked around for this Phantom action figure that I heard was going to come out. I went and looked.
Somebody wrote me a while back and told me that their kid saw the Phantom movie, was super excited about it.
No.
Then they went to KB Toys to buy the action figure. The kid took one look at it and said, "No, I don't want it."
And just wept.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's you couldn't make it up. They're so bad. But we were hungry, which leads me to, we're gonna have to kind of head to the home run here. But at least
I got a couple.
You got a couple, and I want to hear the one, because I think the next one along the lines of the Phantom would be
the Shadow.
Right.
I love the Shadow. I love Alec Baldwin as the Shadow, and maybe that's it.
I like the Shadow.
Kenner was really good at this time. I think basically covering their butt and still producing toys.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of like their Shadow line,
mm-hmm.
but it is very phoned in from other toys.
Well, again, but again, it's got some great ideas. Like half of it, you go, someone is sort of in charge of this that understands what this property was and how to and how to wink at the audience. Like, mail away for this Shadow ring.
Yes,
here's a Shadow that's invisible. You know, the Shadow figure that is just the Shadow with the red and the guns, that's not a bad figure. Ooh, the eyes will light up when you put his head under a light or something. Like, and then the other half of it is just horrible. Like, the other things, it doesn't look like the bad guy. The Alec Baldwin figure in the tux is ridiculous. And you know what I mean? Like, in the vehicle, like, I think there's a car. But then,
yeah, I'm not sure. There's some recycling in that. Like, I know that the Shadow is just a Sheriff of Nottingham body from the Robin Hood line, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a bit of recycling in that line.
Oh, okay.
At least I think there is. You know, I thought it wasn't actually – it almost didn't make the list, but when you put the Phantom, I thought I'd put the Shadow. And, you know, they were right. I guess they were right to do it because the movie did not set the world on fire. It was not the next Batman, but they put a line out there and
– Again, it should have been – it's, I mean, I don't know what that would have done or if it was the wrong time or if there was an oversaturation at the time or what, but it also wasn't helped by – the tone of the script, and it wanted to be something a little more hip and winky winky, and then it wanted to be something that took the character kind of seriously. And you know, when that started, I mean, it was just around the time when I started to hear. I knew of the Shadow because my dad would have got, you know, he used to give me those cassette tapes of like Inner Sanctum and Abbott and Costello and The Shadow and Orson Welles. And I was on a big Orson Welles kick in high school and stuff. And so I knew of the character. He found me some of the paperbacks and I would read those. But at the time, before the movie came out, I started to really go into the deep end and go back and get – oh, you know what it was too? Was the – Howard Chaykin did a Shadow comic in the mid-'80s. My dad got me the Blackhawk comic that Chaykin did, and that led me to The Shadow, which is really dark and violent stuff, which led me to, you know, I think Bill Sienkiewicz did a huge run on The Shadow and some other guys. And so I was really getting immersed. William Kaluta, he was the real guy, the real artist. I had a Kaluta print, I think, by the time the movie came out, a signed print. I don't know what happened to that. So I was ready for this thing. I think I joined the fan club. I had the ring. You remember the ring? There was a Shadow ring that you.
Yeah, I actually I was at a buddy's house in Chicago. He has some of the original Shadow rings in their mailers from the 30s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was super neat to see. Yeah, I mean, like, I knew of the character. I knew, like the Phantom, just not the Batman, Superman type of character that is embraced. So it was tough. And then, yeah, the movie itself has... I don't like the fatal flaw, and a lot of movies make this where, you know, there's an A-bomb before there was an A-bomb, and it might blow up New York. Well, nobody really cares.
Nobody really cares, and your leading lady is Penelope Ann Miller.
Well, she was great looking.
She was okay looking, but she's no, you know, she's no Jennifer Connelly, you know.
I was, well, few are, but true. I was a fan.
But then you get Tim Curry.
And okay,
what are you doing?
Stop you right there. I'm not a fan of Tim Curry, and he is, both the Phantom and, Phantom's got Treat Williams, and the Shadow's got Tim Curry, and it's like the director went, you two, just chew that scenery. Eat it. Because they're both so over the top, it distracts you out of the movie.
Tim and who?
Treat Williams is in The Phantom.
Oh, right.
He's the bad guy. Right. He's brutal.
You know who's great, though, in The Shadow? Now we're digressing a bit. John Lone. Yeah. What the hell happened to John Lone?
John Lone's villain is brilliant.
He was such a good actor, though. He was great in everything he did. What happened to him? Is he still...
I don't know. I'm not in touch.
He was great. He's in it. Ian McKellen is in it.
Yeah, but he's pretty much wasted.
But he's also not very good. He's clearly a stage actor that doesn't know.
He's never going to go anywhere.
No, but he's really not very good in that movie. He's acting like a stage actor, and
he's hypnotized in the movie.
This is before he got hypnotized. This is what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? He's playing the doddering professor.
The pre-hypnosis McKellen in The Shadow.
You know what? We're getting too deep here.
I'm getting
too deep. I want to just gloss over a couple. Mattel's Judge Dredd line.
That's mental. It's another one. You go, what the hell?
I remember walking to a KB and going, why did they make action figures of Judge Dredd, and why are they miniatures?
Right, again, there seem to be elements from the feature a little bit, but not really. It's mainly from the comic, but it's definitely put out to tie in to the feature.
And it's weird. It's Mattel was not known for taking those kind of risks, and that's a figure line completely out of their wheelhouse.
I have a few of those. I have the bike. You know, the one on the bike, I have a few of the robot that he fights.
Yeah. Couple of the bad guys. They're neat. They're neat figures. It's just like, what the hell are they?
Yeah.
I think they did in that format, they did a Jim Lee line as well. Like,
yes.
I don't remember. Or one of these Image comic characters. Yeah, I don't know what they were trying to do.
Wildstorm. No, that's stupid. Wildstorm is a book. No, I know what you're talking about. Like something force.
Yeah.
Like if it's, you know, Jim Lee, or who's the other guy? The guy that Rob Liefeld.
You know, I didn't really read a lot of those comics.
Rob Liefeld's Shit Force.
You know, there was just a lot of over-muscular people in toy stores that I didn't know who they are.
With no ankles.
And, you know, sometimes I love going to flea markets and you just see that pile of, you know, Wildcats and Spawns and.
Yeah.
And, Wet Works and all that stuff. You just go, I don't know what the hell that was about.
I remember like the day that you went to a comic shop and you saw that, what she called Battle Nun something, or was some nun.
Oh, Warrior Nun Aurelia.
Something like that. Yeah. And you saw the figure and you went, oh, someone's doing their own thing. Like McFarlane was doing his thing, and now someone else is going, well, Kenner's never going to pick this up, so I'll make my own figure. And then it became like this epidemic of like everything. Started hitting the, and it was like,
if you ever come back to Toronto, I can show you a comic store. It's in a basement, and it's like the graveyard of every one of those figures.
That's what, you know, people listening know about the Frankensons thing that people go to. Like, it's, I think it's twice a week on a Saturday and a Wednesday, and it's the thing that everyone in LA complains about. That's why you can never.
And they all go to.
They all scoop it up and they take it out to the. Well, you can be walking along there, and sure, you're going to find some stuff that you've never seen at the store, but, you know, shouldn't be out for a month, and they got it and it's out there and it's, you know, $30 a figure. Yeah, that stuff definitely there. A, you got to want to pay for it. But B, the flip side is two booths down, it's just like you described. It's like an old man sitting in a lawn chair. This is indoors, by the way, sitting in a lawn chair with this pile of the dust. Like, the dust has been on this since it was in his attic, and it's been here for years, and it's never shifted. And it's like, you know, an Urkel doll with a, you know, some other crap thing, whatever. That's exactly what that is. But thanks for
I want to wrap up my last one.
Yes.
Because I'm holding them right now. Somebody gave them to me for free at an eBay auction because they screwed me on something else. Mattel, instead of Mego getting the license for Space 1999 in 1975, Mattel got it. And they did a beautiful Eagle spaceship that totally, and they did a playset for these figures, but they did these dolls, and in the United States, they only did the three May principles, so you got, you know, Martin Landau, Barbara Bain, and
Barry Morris.
But they used the bodies from a toy line called the Sunshine Family, which are basically fashion dolls.
What?
So they've got these kind of, like, you know, arms that don't bend and these hands that don't do anything.
Wait, are you talking about the three figures that came with the big eagle trans?
No. Oh. Those are 3 3/4. Those are very crude 3 3/4 inch figures, and I'm very, very fond of those. I'm talking about the Mego dolls they came out with.
Gotcha.
They're far more fashion dolly than they are action figure.
Are
you know,
kind of like, aren't the heads kind of disproportionate too?
They're a bit large. Yeah. They're nice sculpts, but again, you can tell that they got the, you know, somebody at Barbie to make them because they're very soft feature.
Right.
and rather pleasant to look at. They did not do, I guess because the outfits are kind of drab on Space 1999, they got, you know, they put Barbara Bain in a pink version of her outfit, and the guys are in these kind of like ersatz brown versions with different colors than the actual show. They're weird figures, man.
Yeah, I think I know what you're speaking of. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can remember being disappointed in them as a kid, and doubly disappointed as like a teenager when I saw the Mego versions that were sold in England that are what I always wanted. You know, so you know, I still think Mattel did more right with the line.
But it's an oddity that you can appreciate because
yeah.
you dig the Anderson stuff. Well, there's one more I'll throw out there too, and again, this is one that. Again, you'd think at this point they'd kind of know better. I can't think of much like in the past decade or so that's on this sort of level. And again, I have much better perspective. I always kind of assumed a lot of the stuff that I've gone through, I assumed a good chunk of it I would be going through anyway with approvals and things like that. When it gets crazy, that's when I go, never could have thought, you know, that was going to happen. But some of this stuff, like, you know, here's an example of one. Men in Black.
The first
Men in Black movie that came out in 96, 97, whatever it was.
Big hit.
That was a massive, massive hit. And again, on paper, this people should have gone, this is going to be huge. It's those two guys. He had you know, Tommy had already been in The Fugitive. I think he'd won for The Fugitive, and he was already in the Batman thing. And Will Smith, of course, had a track record from Independence Day and a few other things. So, and the premise is genius. It's these alien people have lived among us, and these are the guys that sort of – and it's like just add water. A couple of guys in sunglasses and black suits, and then a bunch of aliens. And it is,
and you could make some really fun kind of – all they do is have a bunch of different toys.
Every one of them. And Galoob got the license. Now, except for – they did do a couple of role play items. They did the eye thing, the flashy eye thing that makes you lose your memory. They did a noisy cricket, the little gun that makes noise, which is pretty cool. It looks just like the movie, and it makes a cool noise. And they made this giant Men in Black gun that is pretty cool. It came with like a little section that opens up and a little tiny alien. The alien from inside the guy's head is actually in this gun, and it makes loads of noise.
But I think what you really want to talk about is the god-awful clunkiness of their weird action figure line.
You know what it was? You know those bar toys, like the guy who, like, you wind it up and it takes a drink and his pants fall down, or the monkey that hits the cymbals, you know, like.
It's a bit like that, and it's also a bit like their larger versions of the toys you get at McDonald's.
Yeah, it's like that's all they do. All they have is an action feature, and that
yeah.
There's no articulation. There's no, you know, they didn't say let's make an articulated action figure and build in a feature of some kind. Every one of them is like, you're right, just quiet. Every one of them is like a Happy Meal thing where it either lights up and does this one trick and then you got to put it back together.
And that god-awful van that looks like it's 10 pounds of plastic. I remember seeing it in the store.
None of it makes any sense. If anybody at Gloob, you should think, well, you know, the great thing is we got the two guys. It's the same sculpt, you know, two different heads, but we can put them in different sets over and over again.
Yeah.
In the black suit with this creature and this thing, whatever, like it is one of the worst movie tie-in lines in history. It is so bad. That's got to be right.
Equally disappointing was they came out with a very competent cartoon.
That was a good cartoon.
It was, and somebody showcased, I think, in Tomarts or something, that they were going to come out with a line of action.
That's
figures.
Right, and they never did.
They never did, and the action figures for that cartoon
yes.
were the ones that should have been for the movie.
Oh my god, I wouldn't have thought of that ever again if you hadn't just brought it up.
That's yeah, I remember great. That. But that was back when I cared.
But I think there was a line of Happy Meal toys that were pretty cool that tied into that animated series. It still wasn't an action figure line, but
believe it or not, I freaking did not enjoy that movie.
Oh,
I loved that animated series.
The animated series I thought was great, and the third one is actually quite good. Go back and watch it a second time if you haven't. It gets better. But
I've never seen it.
The animated thing, you're right. That just made me think of something else. The animated thing that was going to happen that didn't. You just said something else, damn it. That they were great and it should have been that.
Yeah. I thought those figures were probably because I don't know if the Galoob line sold at all.
I don't know, damn it. There was something else I was going to say. Well, oh, no, two quick things. The next time that it happened that was kind of close to it that I kind of went, boy, this is a wasted opportunity, was The Incredibles. Mattel had the license for The Incredibles, and again, this is just add water to me. They're superhero family. Here's the stuff that they do. The line that Mattel came out with is terrible. The articulation, again, action poses that don't do much, or this guy blows apart and he goes back together. But the Disney store had a whole other range of action figures and large-scale figures and dolls. You know, the girl that was an introvert, whatever, they made her as a doll. That was dynamite. That line of action figures had light-up features on the chest, and they had loads of articulation. They came in cool packaging with a trading card and all that stuff. And the other thing, what we should do next time we do something to tie into this, is talk about the stuff that's sort of forgotten or didn't do much but got amazing merchandise or an amazing quick line. And it just made me think of it when you said the animated series of Men in Black. Rusty, the big guy, and Rusty the boy robot. I loved that series. Same people that did the Men in Black animated series. And
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, it's I love
it. I'm aware of it, but I don't think I ever watched
it. I forget now who did a couple, but they made a couple of figures of the big guy that are small figures that say things and light up. And they made a giant big guy that does all kinds of stuff. And we'll talk about that. But that's a great way to do a counterpoint to this, is the stuff that came and went but had an amazing line of merchandise.
Interesting.
There you go. That's a show. All right. That's a show and a preview for maybe the next one.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Good stuff. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. And as always, we love your feedback. I love it when we do something like this in a list kind of a way, and then people can chime in and go, oh, but don't forget about this thing, and they remind us of stuff that we forgot about.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get 10 different things that are absolutely on the money,
right?
And we forgot it. I know that our worst of we got a couple that were like, oh man,
I love that. That's one of my
I do, yeah. And I'm sure after I hang up with you, I'll think of two.
Well, there you go. That's what the internet's for.
All righty.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.